And you definitely want to be extremely careful when you're doing your due diligence. What's the worst thing that'll happen if this tenant goes away? And every deal is a little bit different. And sometimes it's a scary answer and you have to decide, okay, well, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon. And today on the podcast, we've got Ben Kogut on the pod. He is an Austin-based commercial real estate syndicator focusing on mostly triple net leases. And so shopping centers and medical centers and in some industrial parks, as well as car washes that we dig into a little bit. So we get kind of deep into the triple net leasing space. Kind of we compare it a little bit to the multifamily syndication and what the differences, positives, negatives are between both. So if you're interested in learning more about kind of investing in triple net leases and those types of properties, this is definitely a great episode for you to listen to. He's got over almost 20 years of experience. It started as a broker before starting his own syndication shop a few years ago. So let's get Ben on the pod. All right, Ben. Hey, man, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on.
Yeah, Justin, honored to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So no, appreciate the time. Let's jump right in. Maybe give everybody a little bit of an overview of who you are, where you are, and what you're up to.
Yeah, Ben Kogut here in Austin, Texas. I've been in commercial real estate for almost 20 years. I founded and I'm now the CEO of Rooster Equity, and we focus on syndicating retail investment properties, medical properties, industrial properties, mostly just cash flowing investment properties that we can pick up at a discount and just kind of do it deal by deal. And yeah, we've done 45 syndications so far and growing.
Wow. Awesome. So you said that you've been in the business in one form or fashion for almost 20 years. How did you get started in real estate?
Great mentors. Out of college, I was blessed to meet some people that were focused on brokering big shopping centers here in Texas. And so I started as a broker, started making money as a broker. And then as I was making money, I was seeing other people make money. And I said, well, how do y'all do that? And then I started investing into other people's syndications. So it's really a great way to learn the business by actually investing. And then I pivoted from being a broker to being a syndicator. And here we are.
Got it. And when you were a broker, you were doing kind of the same asset class in the commercial side. So not multifamily, but other verticals in that. Is that right?
Yeah, I've only been a shopping center guy and triple net guy. And so I've never really dabbled with multifamily. I find that the shopping center, the stability that comes with that, the long-term leases, triple nets, all that kind of stuff, it's a lot more, in my opinion, predictable. And honestly, that's where my mentors have been. So that's the path I went down.
So talk a little about the triple net and the shopping centers. If I think about shopping centers, you think about they're dying, right? And so maybe I'm not as educated as obviously you are in that space, but like how as an investor, right? Because obviously the people listening to this are trying to make money and put their money to work. So how do you look at a shopping center as an investment and how to underwrite that and think about it?
Yeah, great question. So let's not mix up shopping center with shopping mall. You know, a lot of people think that it's a dying business. Retail is dead. I mean, the secret about Amazon is out. Obviously, Amazon has done what it's done. But now think about where you live, right? You probably have a grocery anchored shopping center near you or maybe strip center or something like that. They're called shopping centers, but really it's where you go to get dry cleaners and nail salons and haircut and so on and so forth. You're not really doing a lot of shopping there so much anymore. Frankly, the industry would probably benefit from rebranding what a shopping center is, but I think that it just is what it is. And so we're buying these centers that have these great, either lots of times a small tenant. And so we find shopping centers that, you know, have a potential to put a little upside in there by renovating it, or just frankly, we just buy them at a discount because we have the system where we throw out a ton of lowball offers and we try to find deals at a discount. And so that's really been, you know, and we know exactly what we're looking for. And then we also have another strategy that we can talk about with partnering with tenants to help them expand as well.
So, okay, got it. So essentially you're looking at shopping centers that your HEB here in the US would be kind of anchored, and there would be, to your point, like a shopping center or like a Twin Liquors and then like a Starbucks or whatever. Like I'm thinking about the one that's down the street from me. And so, okay, got it. So you would go out and find those. And in your broker days, you would actually be calling on the owner of said shopping center and trying to have them sell that to another operator.
Yeah, I mean, great example. You mentioned Twin Liquors. I mean, we've done a Twin Liquors deal. It's a single tenant building. Twin Liquors was in there and they're just paying us rent. And so when we syndicate it, all the investors get to have a piece of that big piece of property and they don't have to do anything. They just sit in the passive position. And we just deal with Twin Liquors who, thank goodness, they pay rent every month and it just kind of is clockwork.
Yeah. And so if I think about like the multifamily world, where obviously we're looking at 100 plus unit apartment complexes, and obviously we're dealing with people where they live and their kind of annual leases, plus we've got to deal with like renovating units. So what are some of the benefits or differences to a triple net lease building? So if you're buying a Twin Liquors or if you're syndicating a Twin Liquors to an investor, obviously they're still both passive investments, right? Investing in a multifamily is passive and also a triple net. But like, what are some of the differences from like a low headaches or no headaches or anything like that to a triple net?
Let's just use Twin Liquors as an example. They sign a triple net lease. And so for those of y'all that don't know what that means, it's the net of the taxes, the insurance, and the maintenance are expenses that are passed through to the tenant. So Twin Liquors pays the landlord rent, and then they pay all those expenses. So if we're going to compare it to multifamily, you have your resident, they pay you a monthly rent, and that's it. They have no idea, nor do they care what the property taxes and insurance and maintenance costs are. And so just different, but from a retail perspective, it really minimizes the risk because taxes, as we all know, they continue to go up and up and up, especially here in Central Texas, really pretty much everywhere, let's be honest. And so as a landlord, it doesn't really affect us. We know exactly to the penny how much rent we're going to get every month. And so as we underwrite the deal and as we go forward into it, we know how to structure a deal so that it makes sense for everybody.
So if in the situation like with taxes, if the taxes go up, that is a pass-through expense to a tenant, right? So your taxes go up 20%, you just pass that expense on to them and they've got to eat it. Essentially, they've got to generate more revenue from their business to still pay the rent and then obviously pay the higher taxes. Is that kind of a simplified version of how that works?
That's exactly correct.
Got it. So that is a lot better to an investor and actually to an operator because you know your expenses. And so what are some of the kind of hidden gotchas or differences? Because obviously, if I think about multifamily, you've got 100 opportunities to rent unit, whereas in the Twin Liquors example, you've got one tenant and one property, and obviously you've got a longer lease, but how often does that tenant leave and how hard is it to backfill that tenant, right? The vacancy rate.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of things. So one of the gotchas is, so there's a difference between triple net and absolute triple net. And the difference oftentimes is the roof and the structure. So in other words, the tenant will not take responsibility for any roof repairs that are needed or if there happens to be any structural issues. On an absolute triple net lease, which we also invest in, if there's a roof leak, landlord is not responsible for it. Tenant has to go and take care of whatever the issue is up there. And so I just want to point out that nuance. Other than that, it's pretty darn straightforward. I mean, buying these triple net deals, okay, so you asked a question about how to replace the tenant. And so one of the important questions to ask going in is how does the rental rate compare to market? And so if the rental rate is at market, then you're great. If it's below market, then you might actually be happy for that tenant to leave because you could replace them with a tenant at or above market sometime in the future. And then the same thing is on the inverse. If it's above market rents, that would be a yellow flag that you want to take a closer look at because, okay, why is this above market rents? Is there a reason? A lot of times it's because the landlord will give the tenant improvement dollars. So an allowance that they can use to fix up their space or whatever it is that they want to do. And then they amortize it into the lease. And so that will increase the rental rate on there. And so you just want to keep an eye out for those types of issues when you're looking at triple net deal.
Got it. This is interesting. I want to continue kind of the, if you don't mind, kind of continue the triple net conversation because I've had somebody else on the podcast a few months ago and I feel like you're doing a really good job of explaining it. But before we dig in a little more, let's take a quick sponsor break and we'll be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Ben Kogut on the pod. And so let's dig in a little bit more into the triple net space because one, it's fascinating. And two, I've been a multifamily guy for 4 years. And anybody listening to this podcast for the last year, the multifamily world has turned itself upside down with interest rates going through the roof, deals that are not performing as well as we had hoped, variable rate debt, all that fun stuff. And so if you're an investor that invested heavily in multifamily and you're looking for staying in the commercial real estate space, but looking at different asset classes, as an investor, like are the cash flows and the returns and the, like, and you're syndicating a deal, is it similar of a return profile and a time horizon in triple net to like a multifamily deal? Are there big differences from an investor standpoint?
Pretty big differences. Our deals are structured to cash flow right away and pay out every month. And so because we have stability on day one, we have cash flow coming in. If we can buy it at a big enough discount, typically you'll start seeing returns right away. And that is not as much what I'm seeing in multifamily. I mean, I don't do a lot of multifamily. I don't do multifamily, but I have seen a lot of debt. Oftentimes you put your money in, you wait a few years, people go in, they put the paint and they do the kitchen and this and that. And then you exit and you pray that you hopefully sell for profit. It's not quite the model here. This is more of a passive income play that you'll start seeing either monthly or quarterly distributions right away. They call it a bond with bricks. And so if you buy a tenant with a really strong credit, like we say Twin Liquors as an example, you know they're going to pay their rent. They're a regional credit tenant versus, I don't know, Chipotle or someone like that. You know they're going to pay the rent. And so that's what we like to look for.
And so from a outlook perspective, like obviously multifamily, they sell you on cash flow plus appreciation, right? And typically you're going to get some cash flow as renovations are going. They do a refinance and you get some capital back. But you also, the property appreciates over those few years, and then you hope to effectively double your investment over a five-year hold, let's just say. Is triple net more of a passive income cash flow play versus an equity appreciation on the back end, meaning you're going to sell it for a much higher multiple than what you bought it for?
Correct. Yeah, you're going to see more cash flow sooner rather than later. It depends on the time horizon that we're talking about, but you're not going to see like a huge exit multiple or anything like that.
Got it.
More of like the stable kind of predictable cash flow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now, obviously, that would be a welcome change to what's going on in multifamily, where most of them, especially ones that were purchased in the last few years, they've paused distributions and done some recaps and all that other fun stuff. So the one thing that has a little bit of a yellow flag in my brain going up is one tenant in the Twin Liquors example, one tenant, one property versus 100 units where you've got 100 tenants, and if 10 leave, you're still 90%. Whereas if Twin Liquors leaves, you're back to zero. So how do you underwrite that kind of single tenant location and the vacancy on having somebody leave?
Yeah, a lot of different ways that we underwrite it. If we can get access to their unit sales, we'll take a look at that, and that'll be quite telling. There's some
meaning the business actually understanding a little bit more about what they're doing from a revenue standpoint to guarantee that they can pay the rent, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Okay. So we're looking at the unit economics. In other words, how many widgets does that tenant have to sell to be able to break even, to be able to afford the rent that they're obligated to pay? Another one that's pretty cool is this AI technology called Placer.ai.
Okay.
And Placer is really interesting. They use cell phone data. We all inherently know that we're being tracked by the phones that we walk around with.
Right.
And so Placer uses that. They update it on a daily basis to determine how many people are showing up, let's say at the Twin Liquors. And then they use that data and they compare it to the other Twin Liquor locations around, let's say the city or the state or the US. And they could tell you precisely how does that location rank compared to the other location that you can compare it to just about anything you want. And so you can determine, okay, well, this location is the top tier location. And then you can look, there's no guarantees in life, but you can make some assumptions that they're not going anywhere and that right. they're going to eat the rent bump when that occurs and they're going to keep paying the rent. And so that's one of our strategies as well.
No, that makes sense. Because obviously, if you're seeing foot traffic be steady or increase, that obviously is a good indicator that in a Twin Liquors example, more people going in, more alcohol being purchased. And obviously, that makes it easy for you guys to underwrite that deal to make it make sense. So we're both here in Austin, and Austin is very much, it's a booming economy and things are growing and there's buildings going up all over the place. Where are you looking from a syndication standpoint? Like, where are you actively looking at deals?
Yeah, all over the country, not as much in Austin anymore. I mean, it's just too frothy here. I'll give you an example. So we closed on a deal last week. So at the end of February 2024, it was a deal in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
And yeah, let me share with you about this strategy. It's a little bit different, actually, than what we're talking about. So we partnered with a car wash chain out of Denver. They are finishing up construction on their brand new car wash. They have about 25 locations in Colorado. And let's just say, I'm going to round the numbers. It cost about $5 million to build a high-end car wash. And the numbers are a little bit high because every piece of equipment in there needs to be redundant so that if something goes down, the whole fit doesn't go down.
Right.
Right. So if the capital stack is $5 million, $3 million of it is debt and $2 million of it is equity.
Okay.
And so we have a relationship with this car wash and they said, hey, we don't want to put up all $2 million. We'll put in $1 million. We'll sign on the debt, but you guys bring in the million. So I syndicated $1 million. We come in as a partner with the tenant. So our interests are aligned. They sign a lease with us as a partnership. So the business signs a lease with the real estate. We're just investing in the real estate. And then they pay us a 12% preferred return. And then we own 55% of the project. And so that's the way that we do it. So we'll cash flow this deal for like probably 12 to 18 months, making distributions regularly to our investors. And then around 18 months or so, we're going to look at how did that store perform? What are the unit economics actually? And if the tenant can afford a higher rent, then we will basically rip up the lease, sign a new lease at that higher rent, and then we'll package it as like a 15-year triple net project, and we'll put it out on the market. And there's a lot of big publicly traded REITs, and there's a lot of buyers that like to own these like passive triple net, absolute triple net deals. And then we'll unwind the whole thing at that point once it exits, pay the debt back, pay all the investors back, and then we basically high five and split the profits accordingly at the end.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like there's a ton of private equity, like big firms that they don't want to buy one car wash. They want to buy a portfolio of car washes that are cash flowing so that they can just come in there, operate it, and collect the cash flow and provide returns to their investors. So that's a very interesting strategy. I guess, how did that come about? Because that's obviously not something that is, I guess, super like common holistically, but I guess, how did that come about? Because that's a very fascinating opportunity.
Yeah, relationships. We have relationships with tenants who are growing. They're very successful and they just don't necessarily have the equity or the resources to go and raise that capital. And so that's what we do here at Rooster is I work with my investor club and give them an opportunity to buy into these little syndication projects. And so it's just all about relationships.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. So we kind of talked earlier about your career in kind of getting into the brokerage side of real estate. And then you went passive and you kind of were like, hey, everybody else is making money and deals that I'm selling. So let me try to, you know, make some cash there as well. At what point did you realize like, hey, I want to go full in on an investor and building a business and all of that?
I had a friend that was raising money for a project and I had some money ready to go. And so at that point is when I jumped in and then I started attending some conferences and a lot of investors show up at these conferences. It's an invite only private real estate group. And so we all basically do deals together, exchange real estate, raise money together, invest in each other's deals. And that's really been a great source of opportunities for me.
Got it. And so you started Rooster when? How long ago?
So I've been doing this for about 5 years.
Okay. Got it. So I want to kind of transition a little bit to the other asset classes, because obviously we kind of talked about triple net and a Twin Liquors example, but like you mentioned about industrial medical properties. So I'm assuming the dollars and cents or the returns are the same, but like, again, buying a medical practice or a medical building doesn't seem like something that a normal Joe Schmo can do. So how does that work? Like, how do you find medical practices or medical buildings that are for sale?
Yeah. So we're not buying the practice. Let me clarify that. We're just buying the real estate.
Right.
And so, yeah, just through relationships, partnering with medical groups who are looking to expand. And they understand that instead of, like, a lot of them just become tenants, but a lot of them want to also be an owner in the real estate. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that real estate expertise. And so that's what we'll bring to the table. We'll basically hold hands with them and find the right real estate. We'll co-invest together. They'll be the tenant. And we'll just handle all the real estate side of the business.
Got it. Interesting. And I guess the one thing that I've noticed in kind of multifamily over the last couple of years that has kind of been a reason why or a reason why a property did or did not kind of perform is the asset manager. And so is it similar in triple net where you have somebody on your team as a syndicator, whether you're finding the deal or not, but like that is managing the asset from like an operation standpoint and making sure that how you underwrote it and the business plan that you've outlined is actually being executed on? Because I'm assuming there's not really a property manager in respect as with multifamily, you've got an on-site staff and dealing with leases and all that stuff. Like your HEBs and Twin Liquors don't have property managers on site, right? Like how does that work?
So they're not on site, but there are property managers. I mean, there are issues all the time, broken lights, landscaping issues, sign issues, whatever. Yeah. So the way that we do that is we do third-party management.
Okay.
And so it's usually local to wherever that property is, because we have properties all over the country, mostly in the Midwest. And so since they're triple net, as a landlord, it benefits us, and because we could pass those expenses through to the tenant. So they ultimately will cover the costs for those management expenses.
Interesting. So if there is a landscaping contract, that expense is pushed into or pushed back to the tenant.
Yeah. Yeah. So every year we'll do what's called a CAM reconciliation, or triple net reconciliation, which includes CAM. And CAM stands for common area maintenance. If it's one tenant or even if it's multi-tenant. Yeah, we're going to basically look at what all the, probably right around this time, actually, right in the first quarter, we're going to say, okay, what were all the expenses last year? And we're just going to reconcile it.
Interesting. And so I'm assuming based on, so if it's a multi-tenant scenario and you've got an HEB and a hairdresser and a Twin Liquors and a Starbucks, like obviously they occupy different square foot percentage-wise, right? So do you divide the expenses based on like square foot usage?
Exactly. It's all pro rata.
Got it. Very interesting. This is definitely something that I need to dig into more, because obviously, I guess the biggest concern that I would have is just if you lose the tenant, right? Because it's not as easy to probably find another Twin Liquors or another similar Chipotle or whatever to come in and occupy that space like it is to find like another tenant in a multifamily space. So like if you have a Twin Liquors or a restaurant in a single tenant, like what is the typical duration between tenants? And maybe it obviously depends on location and all of that, but.
Yeah, it's a fair question. And you definitely want to be extremely careful when you're doing your due diligence on these questions, because restaurant is going to be a lot more expensive than, frankly, Twin Liquors is really just an open floor plan with some coolers and stuff in the back, but it's not as expensive versus a car wash. Car washes are very expensive. You can't really do anything else with that building besides have a car wash.
Right.
So we're going to look really, really, really careful. This question that you're asking is a great question. It's like, what's the worst thing that'll happen if this tenant goes away? And every deal is a little bit different. And sometimes it's a scary answer and you have to decide, okay, well, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything. You got to make sure you vet the tenant that you have, right? Because obviously for triple net, it's very important that they have a long lease and also make sure that they are able to pay the rent, right? Because obviously that's the biggest factor. Is there a value add play in triple net? Because obviously you're passing a lot of the kind of maintenance and expenses onto the tenant. So like, is there a way to increase rents without just identifying a property that is undervalued?
If we can find a shopping center that might have some vacancy, so maybe it's like 80% occupied, so we know it's already cash flowing, it'll cover the debt service and make some distributions right away. And then we could go in and put the money or whatever the problem is, we'll go solve the problem so that we can fix that vacancy or add the value or give it a little bit of a facelift, so to speak. Or we've also walked hand in hand with a tenant. They said, hey, we want to occupy that space. And so we'll basically buy it with them and provide them with some TI allowance for them to be able to do the finish up that they need. And then we've also done some build to suit, which is another strategy where they say exactly where they want to go. We'll tie up the land, we'll build it for them. They'll sign a 15-year lease and everyone's happy.
Got it. Sounds like a development deal. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so obviously multifamily has, especially value add multifamily, has gone through the ringer over the last 2 years with a lot of variable rate debt. Is there a variable rate debt component, or is this mostly you're just getting long-term fixed rate debt, so your risk on a interest rate perspective is minimal?
So it's been a blend. I mean, historically, we've been able to lock 10-year fixed rate debt. Lately, we've been doing all cash, and I would say just waiting for more favorable lending to come in to be able to refinance, get everyone their cash back. And the deals are good enough where it makes sense to do that.
Yeah.
And it really makes it so that there's hardly any risk. So, but the numbers are more difficult to pencil when you're not using positive leverage.
Right.
So I'd say right now it's mostly just been all equity.
Got it. Yeah. It's definitely difficult to find a deal to work just because people are still wanting a premium, but also it's just with the debt service and all that, it's just hard to make deals work. You mentioned Denver as a market that you're active in, obviously in the car wash space. What are some other markets that you are seeing as opportunities to still find good deals?
Yep, I like the Midwest. So Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Kansas, Missouri. I spend a lot of time in that part of the country.
Got it. And then when you were a broker, were you here all in Austin in Texas?
Yeah, I've been here in Austin the whole time. I've been in Austin since 2000.
Okay, got it. Yeah, it's a shame. You can't find anything here in Austin because it's already overpriced for a lot of things.
No doubt.
I guess as you think about kind of 2024, we're recording this in kind of early March 2024, Fed's talking about cutting rates or maybe not, and who knows how many times and all that fun stuff. But from a triple net and from your kind of side of the commercial real estate space, what is your outlook for this year? It sounds like you're closing deals still. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, very optimistic. I think there's always opportunity. I mean, it's like the bus. The next one's around the corner. And so we're doing deals. I think that there's still a lot of cash on the sideline, but I think the lending market is still pretty wonky. And so that has a lot of people sitting on the sideline, which is why we're continuing to move forward and make offers on deals and see a lot less competition. Not to say that there isn't competition, but there's just less competition. And yeah. So one of our strategies is really just to make a lot of offers. And when we make offers, we don't typically send a letter of intent. We'll just send a purchase contract. Mm. We'll also preemptively send a list of references, which helps us kind of continue to move forward because we're usually almost never the highest price. We're never the highest price, I'll put it that way. But we're usually either the first offer they get and we just do what we say we're going to do. And it's sometimes psychologically, I don't know what it is, but the first offer statistically gets done more often. Yeah. So we try to get the offers in really quickly.
How do you do that? Like, how do you get an offer to somebody? Obviously, you don't want to cut your due diligence short or your underwriting short. Like, how do you feel confident to send an offer and not even an LOI, just to send like, hey, we're going to purchase this at this price and let's go?
I would say oftentimes we always get counted. Right. So it's not that we're just going to like send a contract, they're going to sign it, and then the clock starts ticking. And keep in mind, we know the market, we know what we're looking for, and we don't speed up the due diligence process. So that will come once we're under contract. But since we know what we're looking for, we can quickly send out contracts.
Got it. Fair enough. So it sounds like 2024, still positive, still doing deals. I guess as you think about kind of the asset class within what you look at, are there ones that are more favorable right now? Obviously, multifamily, you don't really dabble in, but like of the triple net leases or of the industrial or medical or anything like that, are there any that are more attractive at the moment?
We like triple B credit tenants.
Okay.
So it's not the top tier credit rated tenants like a Chipotle. I don't know what the credit rating of Twin Liquors is, but it's probably a little below where we're typically playing, but somewhere in that like mid-tier, the big publicly traded REITs, they always gobble up the top tier deals. We don't really mess with non-credit tenants. And so we try to find somewhere that kind of sweet spot is the niche that we've been going after, where the tenant can afford to pay the rent. We're not going to lose any sleep at night, and we're not going to pay a premium for that brand named tenant that's occupying the space.
Got it. Very cool. Well, this has been very fascinating. We've kind of rapidly fired through triple net and got super kind of technical in some of the areas. So I appreciate you doing that. But as we transition to the end here, I've got three questions that I ask every guest. So I want to kind of jump into those. So you mentioned you've got some mentors. So I'm curious, you may have some good insight into this question. So what's one piece of advice that got you started on your real estate journey?
That it's better to copy genius than create mediocrity. What I'm doing now is what I learned from my mentors. It's what I learned by investing in these deals. And that's what, I'm not saying we're not reinventing the wheel here, but we're trying to improve upon it. And so that's my answer.
No, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. It's obviously paying for mentorship or getting it for free is obviously ideal. But, you know, finding people that are more successful or ahead of where you are right now is usually worth its weight. So that makes sense.
Amen.
All right. Question two, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Ooh, so that's a great question. I will answer it this way. I have an app called Blinkist.
Okay.
Blinkist, the audio book, but on steroids. They just do like Cliff Note versions of books. So I'm like devouring books in like 15-minute increments. So shout out to Blinkist. Maybe they'll sponsor your pod for that one.
Very cool. Are there any in there that you've listened to that are like, oh, this is a cool one that I got a lot of insight?
Right now, I have been focused on scaling my business. And so I've been learning a lot more about how to work with virtual assistants. And so I have a team that's helping me virtually. And so that's really where I've been focusing my attention to make sure we have the right people doing the right things in the company.
Got it. Fair enough. All right. Last question is, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life just off of the passive income from your investments, what would you do?
I would probably keep doing what I'm doing, but travel. I mean, who doesn't love to travel and spend time with your loved ones and give back? Try to do my part to do tikkun olam, which is the Hebrew word for making the world a better place.
Oh, very cool. No, that's awesome. I like that a lot. So awesome, Ben. This has been a lot of fun. If people want to learn more about Rooster and what you're doing and, you know, learn more about your deals, what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So roosterequity.com. Why Rooster? Well, my last name, Kogut, is Polish and it means a rooster. Ah. And so that's why I named it Rooster Equity. And if anybody's interested, I wrote a book called Mission Matters, where I share the lessons that I've learned from all the passive income and real estate investing. And so you can find that at roosterequity.com/book.
Awesome. Very cool. We will add that to the show notes. Ben, it's been awesome to get to chat with you for a little bit. Thanks for sharing your story. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Justin.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.